Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue Alpine TV. In today's episode, we'll talk about Japan and their potential ban of the cryptos Dash and Monero, as well as the new regulations. And we'll talk about what exactly happens once we have mined all 21 million Bitcoin. But let's jump right into this first news story about Japan. Japan's financial watchdog sets out new requirements for crypto exchanges. So in Japan, there is the Financial Services Agency, the FSA, and they are basically doing the regulations regarding cryptocurrency exchanges. And as you know, there were some strict regulations in the last couple of months, notably the AML and the KYC laws, so the anti-money laundering and the Know Your Customer laws. And since then, actually, Japan has been fairly stable when it comes to regulation and rules and laws regarding crypto exchanges. So most crypto exchanges are actually adhering to those rules, and if not, they're actually dabbling a bit in illegal waters. Now, the reason why the FSA is currently looking at again at regulatory aspects is because of the CoinCheck hack that happened a couple of weeks ago or months ago, the 532 million that have been stolen in terms of NEM tokens, and which is the single biggest exchange hack that happened in the kind of history of the crypto ecosystem. So they are actually saying, or it's more the FSA source telling to Nikkei Asian Review, that they're currently kind of dabbling a bit in the dark when it comes to these things. So they want a bit more stricter control on these exchanges in order to control it. So they are kind of proposing a new framework, and they are saying that exchanges will now be required to monitor customer accounts multiple times daily for suspicious fluctuations. So in the case of a hack happening and a lot of money moving around, that they will see and understand this, manage client assets separately from those of the exchange, so kind of a cold storage idea, and store crypto holdings on offline systems only, which is more cold storage. They will also face stricter anti-money laundering measures, which demand Know Your Customer checks, such as ID verification and multiple password protection for large transfers. So in some cases, for example, I think when you're doing big transactions on Bittrex or Bitstamp, you already have to kind of verify the transaction once again via email or via SMS. So depending on the type of exchange you're using, you already have those type of double password protections in place. Now, what is a bit interesting is that they are saying that government registered exchanges will face tight restrictions, effectively a ban on the trading of anonymity-oriented altcoins such as Dash and Monero. Now, I'm not really sure whether this means an actual ban. I would wait to kind of announce this, but this is quite a heavy story in my opinion. It's even more important than the other parts because, I mean, I understand why the reasoning behind it is because Monero is mainly used in kind of washing the money or washing the tokens that have been stolen. So let's say you're stealing a lot of NEM tokens or Ethereum tokens, then you exchange them for Monero and effectively leaving the trace there, and without trace being able to move them to Monero to other exchanges or to other wallets, gives you a lot of security in that way. Now, that could mean that the Japanese agencies, are effectively banning Dash and Monero for the money laundering aspects. But like I said, it's a bit too early to judge. Nonetheless, I think it's important that we're kind of doing certain regulatory aspects. I wouldn't go as far as banning Dash and Monero, especially considering that they're quite popular cryptocurrencies. I mean, for a reason, obviously, as we've looked at, and the kind of the dark web or the illegal trades that are being done in cryptos, Monero is together with Litecoin actually on the first two spots. So it is kind of the cryptocurrency that is being used for illegal activities, and for that reason I can understand why they're doing that, but it's kind of a pity that they are banning it and that this is the only way to do it. I would go with tighter control over the exchanges, absolutely, but I wouldn't ban any cryptocurrency, because this will just make the cryptocurrency stronger in that aspect. If we move to the next story, and this is actually not a story, but more of a kind of philosophy slash theory on what will essentially happen if we mine all 21 million Bitcoins. As you know, Bitcoin is limited to 21 million in terms of units. We are currently, I think, at 16 million. Let's check just to be sure. And yeah, we have actually reached 17 million in circulating supply as we are crossing these 9,500 a bit as well. And so the big question arises kind of, what happens once we mine the 21 million Bitcoin? And the thing is, the first of all, the most important thing you have to know is it's very unlikely that we will see the 21st million millionth Bitcoin that is being mined, as there is something called halving of the kind of the transactions or how do you say this, and so there's every time when you mine Bitcoin, the difficulty of mining Bitcoin becomes a little bit harder, and at every certain point there will be a halving of the block size. So every time you're kind of mining Bitcoin, you're receiving a certain block, and that block is measured in Bitcoin. I think currently it's 12.5 Bitcoins, but after a certain while, this block will actually get halved. So instead of 12.5, you receive 6.25 and so on. And this will halve up until 2140, and which is 122 years from now. That is the first thing. The second thing is what exactly or how exactly is this working? So for the podcast listeners, we've seen a couple of graphs here, mainly like how many Bitcoins have been mined. And it's saying that 80% of the Bitcoins that have been mined are actually like 80% of the circulation and of the supply has been mined already. And the rest of those, which is the 20%, will be mined until 2140. And with that, also blockchain size increasing as well, obviously. And well, currently, if you're a miner, how you make money is by essentially confirming and verifying transactions. That's one thing. And the other thing is actually mining the Bitcoins. But once the mining aspect is done, you will lose, obviously, currently that's 12.5 Bitcoins per block that you're mining. And once this is gone, you will only be incentivized by kind of verifying transactions. Now, how the higher the fee is, the more incentive for you as a miner will be there to actually prioritize to be included in that block. So this could be technically one of the ways how miners could be incentivized to even continue mining, because let's say I want to send a transaction to my friend, but it needs to be really, really fast. So I actually bump up the transaction fee a little bit so that the miner is actually more incentivized to confirm my transaction even faster. Now, this is, I think, an important concept and theory you have to kind of realize. Yes, it is far away still, but it is limited. So at a certain point, there will not be any more new Bitcoins, and that could actually cause the Bitcoin price to really increase. And this is what a lot of investors and a lot of people are actually betting on, that once we reach those 21 million, yes, we might not see it all, or all of us will might not see it, but some of us will. And the thing is that even before there, it's very likely that the price will increase, just because there is a limited amount of Bitcoin in circulation. Now, the transaction fees have actually been reduced since we have kind of introduced SegWit to the network. And the other thing is, as you can see here, for the podcast listeners, we're looking at current total transaction fees, and we've had this crazy amount of transaction fees in December and January, obviously when Bitcoin prices were super high as well, but since then it has dropped quite significantly. And the other point is obviously the Lightning Network as well, because as you know, the Lightning Network works in a way that there will be payment channels opened between two parties, and these payment channels will actually stay open. And while they're open, there will not be any transaction fees during the openness of the channel, and only the opening and the closing will actually be recorded on the blockchain, hence making it so fast. So it is very interesting to kind of think about what will technically happen. And what I think we have to keep in mind as well is we will face certain technological barriers and problems along the way. And the thing is, we will solve them by fixing the code. That's the beauty of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. It's programmable money, it's programmable networks, it's programmable protocols that we're using here. So if we see a flaw in the system, we can fix it programmatically. We can fix it by fixing the bugs or fixing certain features and improving on top of them. So Bitcoin in that regard won't be any different. If the Bitcoin core developers realize that this is going to be a problem kind of in terms of size, or let's say block size or whatever, then they can actually increase it and actually improve the network. And these are exactly the things that are being discussed kind of in the community right now. Is the block size big enough? It started out with 1 megabyte and then has been increased to 2 megabyte with SegWit 2x, and these questions always arise. But the reason why they arise is because everyone wants to make Bitcoin kind of future proof. And with that, we're at the end. I will link this article. It's quite interesting for you also to kind of read through and understand how exactly in theory Bitcoin mining works, and as well as what exactly could happen. But I think in any case, yes, there will be limited, but I think we will solve them programmatically. And with that, we're already at the end of today's episode. Make sure to like this video, subscribe to the channel, subscribe to the podcast. I'll see you on the next one. Bye.